Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have with us David Salinas, who's an entrepreneur, investor, and co-founder of Digital Surgeons. David, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm excited to talk about you because looking at your bio, you've done a thing or two for a minute or two, and I'm excited to learn from your experience. So give us a little bit of your background and your entrepreneurial journey up to this point, and then we'll dive into some fun conversation.
Absolutely. So for as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be an entrepreneur. I started several businesses as a young man, but ultimately landed on starting an agency called Digital Surgeons in 2006, right at the end of 2006, with my partner, Peter. We had about $5,000 between us, and we launched that company. That company turned into a platform for everything that would take place over the next 16 years for us. So investing in startup companies, launching brands off of our balance sheet and with our savings from the company. Got into real estate development and we've been just having fun.
You know, that's, you hear that and I think people think it's kind of like cliche, like, oh, just have fun. But that really is a big part of business and personal success, right? I mean, when you can pull back a little bit and have pockets of fun, maybe it's not fun all the time. Like you hear about these companies that, you know, that you're skateboarding through the office and playing pinball in between your meetings. Maybe it's not that level, but talk a little bit about the, environment of having fun, which then stimulates good business.
Yeah, I think there's two different sides of fun, right? So people think that the skateboarding sort of ping pong foosball table thing is like part of culture and fun for employees. I want to separate that for a second. I think that that is that's not culture. I think that's gimmicky. I'm talking about like I really enjoy business. I enjoy the art of it. I enjoy the ups and downs of it, the journey. So for me, negotiations, the energy of business, the, you know, coming up with a vision, seeing it through, being right about decisions or ideas, and people. And I think that's when I say fun, that's the part to me that's fun. Yeah. Obviously there are elements of entrepreneurship that are less fun, which is the HR, people management, you know, the ups and downs of having to manage to manage clients and payrolls and all of that unfun stuff. But for the most part, I'd say that if you can stomach it, it's quite enjoyable.
You know, it reminds me of a book way back in the day from a top real estate investor. The book was called The Art of the Deal. And whether you like the author or not, the gist of that title is exactly what you just said. It's like, the deal. That is the art of the deal. It is not just some checklist, 1, 2, 3, 4, next. It's like the art of putting together deals and business and creative. And I'm with you. You just get energetic when you talk business. And I can be at a social function and be bored to tears. But the minute we go, ooh, tell me about your business, I'm all in. So it really is that fun. And some people would, you know, I'm glad you separated that out because it doesn't mean, you know, playing games fun. It means just make sure that we are present and all in, and that results in fun because you're doing the right things for the right reasons.
Absolutely. I mean, for me in marketing, so I started an agency 16 years ago called Digital Surgeons. We worked on, I don't know how many brands, I mean, in the hundreds, because they've over the years, they've changed. We've had different size clients and so on and so forth. So we've touched so many different types of business and they all light me up. Even if it's the most mundane, you know, sort of practice, it still lights me up because I'm learning about what moves that mundane business. And I think for me, that's always kept me, everybody always asks me like, oh, you seem so busy. How do you sleep? And I always tell people, I sleep like a baby. Like every day I go to sleep because my brain has fully discharged, right? It has no more power left because I've used it all day and I get exhausted and I fall asleep. And when I wake up, I'm excited for the next day.
Ready to go. Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. I've done right about 875 episodes on this podcast here, and I've been interviewed on dozens of others. And I literally last week got a file back from when I was interviewed about a month ago, and I was listening back to me being interviewed. And I was like, man, alive, that was just electric. I almost made myself a note to transcribe my own interview, because it's like, I nailed that. Because, and you'd think after 900 and something interviews, it's like, okay, hey, what do you want to know? Done. But that really is the mark of someone that has found their passion and purpose and where they're at. So I think that is spectacular. You know, and I know that in your bio, you talk about buying a building for a dollar and turning it into $25 million. Tell us a little bit about what that process was and some of the hurdles you went through and even failures to end up with that success.
Absolutely. So it's true. I bought a dollar building or a building for a dollar. The impetus for that was we as an agency were growing. We had been through three or four two different offices, four different expansions, because we kept our budgets tight, right? So when we started, we had one office, we moved to a second office, and then expanded it three or four times. Through serendipity, the building we were in would not allow us to expand anymore and wouldn't allow us to, and the building had gotten purchased. So through necessity, we went out looking for another property. I was the CEO of the company at the time, so moving us was very important. We had about 20 months left on the lease, and we had to, and that time can go really quickly when you have construction and office build out and all this stuff. So knowing that throughout the years that had been a headache, not wanting to lose time, we went looking for property and we struck out. We couldn't find anything affordable in the city we wanted to be in that looked like that had the feel, the look and feel, the aesthetic that we were looking for and the energy we were looking for. So in the back of my head, I had this idea from years ago prior to WeWork, prior to all these co-working spaces, to build a collective building where we'd house people of a similar mindset, creative mindset, technological mindset, and bring everybody together. And it so happened one night, I was looking at a Google image of the area that our current office was in. And I saw this building across the street, literally smack across the street, which was an abandoned bus depot. It was 200,000 square feet on 9.5 acres. And I looked at it from above for the first time because I had driven past it every day and looked at it every day when I got in my car. But it was surrounded by weeds and had broken windows, and it had a barbed wired fence, and you couldn't really see it. But from above, you could see this, just the pure magnitude of the space. Hmm. So I immediately sort of printed it out and started to write on a piece of paper on the drawing what it could be. And then the next day started to tell people stories about what I wanted to do with it. I got the building in play. The city, I had by contacting my city that we were in, which city of New Haven, which is in Connecticut. And they asked the state if the state would be willing to part with the property because the state owned the asset. It was the bus depot, which was controlled by the State Department of Transportation. The state said that they would put it up for an RFP, for a request for proposal. And then we had to compete for it. And I built this image, this brand, this story about a campus that would foster technology and innovation and the like. And they really liked the story. And when they asked me how much I'd be willing to bid on the property to acquire it, I said $1. And the guy that was against us bid $3.1 million. And we wound up going head to head with him in the finals.
Oh my word.
And the people that were in charge of deciding who would get the property unanimously decided that it should go to me. And then I was able to use that. And then the real problem had to happen, because now they said yes to me, and now I had to figure out actually how to get it done.
Yeah.
which required tenacity and creativity. It's the only way I can explain that.
That $1 bid is like a pattern interrupt. In marketing, you know, we'd call it a pattern interrupt. And I'm sure that those people on the committee were like, what? And then they refer back to your pitch, proposal, but most importantly, story. So talk a little bit, not the details of the story, but what went into that pitch that was a story that would have been different than what they heard from other people, because probably the other investors were like, we're going to do this and you're going to get that, and it's boom, 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 numbers, numbers, numbers. So talk a little bit about the benefit of story to really bring that point home.
Well, for starters, so great question. For starters, I think that the key element, the difference between his, because he had a story too, right? He was going to build something. The difference was that his story didn't have, didn't really resonate with the audience he was talking to.
Okay.
And more importantly, didn't really have the data that I had, excuse me, which was that I had been around that city for so long, and more importantly, the state for so long, understanding and talking to people about economic development and the excitements that were happening around the country in different pockets of the country, like Research Triangle in North Carolina and Silicon Valley and Austin and Boston and so on and so forth. I knew what was going on there, and I knew that people had a real desire for that. So knowing your audience is so critical, right? In marketing, if you know your audience, if you survey your audience, if you listen to your audience, they tell you what they want, what their desires are, what they're looking for. So I really understood the audience. And then I also understood the audience that was going to be in front of me the day of the pitch. So yeah. I painted a picture and a story according to that, which was a community of people that would benefit by being together. That it would be a multiplier effect, and that we had figured out the kernel that made these communities successful, that made these buildings successful. And the kernel was communities. And if you took those communities and you made them into micro sort of nano communities, you'd realize that these nano communities can all be sort of nursed and brought to life in different ways, that they together they form these giant communities. And we told that story in a way, and we called it District. Had a great name, right? A single word name, District, and it ended in CT, which is the acronym for Connecticut. So it sort of nodded to the fact that we were doing something special for the state. So it just touched on all the right stuff. And the other guy, to be very frank, was bidding $3 million, $3.1 million to build a supermarket and a parking garage, which is not inspiring.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not sexy, inspiring, and I think all those little, you know, and did you happen in your pitch to have the CT in the word district bold or a different color or anything to draw attention to that, or did you point to that at all?
We did. We pointed it to a very, very, in a very subtle way. Everything about design needs to be subtle. We didn't want to be overt about it, but people saw it. You know, you could point to it, you could talk to it. It sort of stuck out the way we did it. We also mocked up the logo in such a way that it really sort of stood out to you, like, oh, there's the CT, but it wasn't totally obvious.
Right. Just enough of a touch that people, when they get it, they go, ooh, that was nice. And I think that, again, let's touch on the two main things that you really struck a home run with here, a grand slam, is you knew your audience. You did research ahead of time, then you structured the pitch to the audience, and through the story, you know, and not a once upon a time, but through the, I like to say this, everyone's favorite radio station is WIIFM. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. What's in it for me?
Yep. So you advertised, air quotes, on WIIFM, and you pitched that story to that group, knowing what they would want to hear. What's in it for them? You know, another parking lot, another garage, another grocery store, whatever. You know, it's almost like boring to them. Like, they're not going to get, you know, okay, yeah, we're going to get tax revenue of X, and okay, good jobs, great. But, ooh, we're going to get all of that plus this with District? That's something that's newsworthy, storyworthy. That's exciting. So the power of tying in, knowing your audience to story, I think that's, you know, again, you talk about art and creativity and enthusiasm, that's a powerful skill. That's an art form.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's exactly what we did. And post the award that day, then they said, you know, we award this to David and his team unanimously. After that, we had to actually figure out how to finance the project, which was difficult to do because we didn't have a background. We didn't have leases signed and all the things that banks want to see. So that's when we had to get creative about financing. And we actually found a financing mechanism, which I won't get into today on the marketing discussion, but that particular financing mechanism required storytelling about community and job growth and workforce development and all the things that was already naturally baked into the vision, so that we were able to unlock, you know, over $10 million in funding, with limited out of pockets, for the equity holders, and then build this thing, which is now worth $25 million.
So what do you think about this phrase? I've heard it. I forget where I heard it from, but it's all based on what we're talking about here, story and building, you know, this anticipation. People want transformation, but they don't necessarily care upfront about the transportation. So they want to be transformed. They want the future vision of that transformation. But do you really want to bore them with the details and all getting in the weeds of this and this and this and that and the other? No, that you just talk to that transformation. You talk about that future transformation. And then when they're all excited about that, then you're like, oh, well, what we're going to do is build a building called District, and we're going to do all these things. And I think that that's where people, whether it's salespeople or pitches or investors, they miss the boat and they feel like they want to just get into the weeds and get into all the details. But, you know, it's been said, when you confuse, you lose. Well, story, the way you're describing it, eliminates all of that, or at least dramatically reduces it.
So I've never heard it said that way, but I have a way to describe what you just described differently. And I've used this throughout my career. And I call it, it's basically the cork sniffers. There's people that drink, that want to drink the wine, and there's people that want to sniff the cork and talk about it for 15 minutes. Yeah. And so often in every industry, we just did a huge project in the cannabis space, and all these, and I was on stage talking about the brand with a bunch of other brands, at a recent conference, and everybody was talking about how much education needs to go into play into the space, and how we need to educate the customer and do all this stuff. And I literally stopped them and I said, there are a small percentage of people that like to sniff the cork and learn about the wine. And that's who you're talking about. But there's a lot of people that just want to go to sleep with cannabis, right? Or be creative or reduce their anxiety. And they don't give, quite frankly, a shit about what the cannabis is and what the terpene profiles are and all the science behind it. And I know that makes some people upset and angry, but, and I've seen this in so many, when we worked in guitars, there was a lot of, there was so many people that wanted to talk about the wood of the guitar and how it was made. And there's some people that just want to pick the guitar up because it looks good and it makes them feel good and they just want to strum it. Right.
Well, you know, it's like there's people that are, you can connect with through auditory, kinesthetic, and visual. So some people just want to hear about it, good. Some people want to see it and not read about it, okay, that's fine. But what you just said reminded me of what I've heard called technobabble. You know, don't get into the weeds of all of the stuff. And yeah, there's people that want that, and there might even be a time for that. Like, hey, once you become our, you know, bronze level member, investor, whatever the case is, you know, you're in the family. Now let me tell you about all this other stuff, and that could move them through the stair-step process of levels or products or services. There's a time for that. Or maybe people just, you know, hey, you can, if you want to learn more, head on over to our website under research and you know, drive yourself bats on the research tab. But yes, to your point, something extremely simple. Here's the deal. If you want this, we've got that. Because you know what, whatever the product is, that you're, you know, guitars. You know guitars should do this. You don't care about the wood. Now, some people do, and they geek out on that, and that's wonderful. But I think that we need to really keep in mind here that what we've talked about so far is knowing your audience, knowing how to clearly communicate what's in it for them and what your solution solves the problem that they're experiencing, and then maybe spruce it up and tighten it up with some nice story examples so that it doesn't feel like some pitch or, you know, a lot of, details or getting into the weeds.
Exactly. And in a perfect scenario, you can figure out a thread to pull that gets you to an irrational thought or an irrational benefit. Because if you can figure that out in any particular product, brand, or service, then I think you've found the real gold. Difficult to do, but always.
So now let's.
I think people get really excited over irrational benefits.
I agree 1,000%. Let's wrap up this thought process with Digital Surgeons is a media web design company. in a Reader's Digest version nutshell, how do you take the brands you work with, help them to create their story and put that out in a visual medium?
So we're focused on, so Digital Surgeons is actually, we've coined a design demand company or consultancy. Why design demand is because demand is what every business wants. Designing demand is the key. And what we've learned is in 2018, there was a McKinsey study that showed that design-led brands were over 200% more successful than the S&P 500 as a whole. And for us, design across strategy, across your web, across your emails, across all the different types of communications that you can do is absolutely the most critical. So we spend a little bit more time belaboring on design, not just visual, but obviously the who, the what, the when, the how to make brands successful. And we've done that from venture funded startups all the way to, at this point in our career, all the way to Fortune 50 companies that we work with today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I think, you know, the track record of success and success leaves clues, all of those little, you know, cliches, you can stand on your past record of, you know, powerful delivered projects and people that have said, been there, done that, and they're the real deal. So if someone is interested in reaching out, connecting with you, and you, even learning a little bit about what maybe Digital Surgeons could do for their brand, what's the best way they can reach out and connect with your team, David?
So Digital Surgeon, so the best way to connect with us, digitalsurgeons.com. That's digitalsurgeons.com. We're on Instagram and LinkedIn at Digital Surgeons. I can be found on most platforms as at iGrowBrands. That's iGrowBrands.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on today. It was a real pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me again and introducing me to your audience. It is a pleasure to speak with you today.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.